Now,
worst.
Again, as I said before, there is no end to the bad horror films. 92% of them are awful, god-awful, unwatchable wastes of your time. So it becomes, what criteria are you going to be using? Clueless filmmakers, low budget, ridiculous concept, stupid remake. So we're going to pick up the pace a little bit because, as we discovered in the F This Summer podcast, it's not nearly as fun to make fun of these things as you might think. We just want to forget them. In no particular order, Night of the Lepus, which Channel 2 used to show endlessly when I was a child, very late at night. And Night of the Lepus is a horror movie in the giant creature subgenre. Only the problem is, it's giant bunnies. It's the Easter Bunny! Boo!
I've never seen it, but is it just a lot of like forced perspective and modeled, you know?
It's real bunnies on miniature sets. Right. Oh, and man. Oddly enough, the film co-stars Janet Leigh, the star of Psycho. So that's crazy serendipity.
One of the best and one of the worst.
They come up with a sound effect for supposedly what bunnies sound like when they're huge. It doesn't help. It's laughable. I think the worst monster in horror movie history.
Well, like you said, it's so hard to pick because so many of them are so bad and set their sights so low almost. You know, am I going to pick on a movie like Jack Frost about the killer snowman? That, like, that movie knows it's shit. That's why it exists. So why pick on it? Of course it's terrible. So you have to go with different criteria. So one of the ones I went with, I chose because it is the sole directing effort of famous horror author Stephen King, and that is a movie called Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. We talked about The Shining, one of the best horror movies ever made, directed by arguably, you know, one of the greatest American filmmakers. Stephen King has a problem with it. Okay, asshole, you make a movie, and he makes Maximum Overdrive, a movie about killer cars. Not really machines come alive due to a comet that has green gas around the planet. And one man is killed by a soda machine.
That's the scene I always remember.
Shoots a can at his balls and then his head.
And you've heard the concept of having a tin ear for music. Mm. Given the fact that Stephen King has written some wonderful horror novels, it is amazing what a tin ear he has, or a tin eye, for horror he has in that movie. Because the only thing I remember about that film, besides its boredom and pointlessness, is how ugly and mean-spirited some of it is.
Yeah.
And you have to be very careful when you do that, because you sort of have to get the audience on your side.
Right.
And he doesn't.
Right.
It's bad. In fact, the entire last half seems to sort of be a rehash of Assault on Precinct 13 and Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
The people trapped inside and has to get out enclosure
and gas up the trucks. He later admitted that he was essentially high on cocaine the whole time and that he is not proud of the movie at all, and with good reason, because it's a real piece of shit.
No truer words were ever spoken. We mentioned before Plan 9 from Outer Space, which some people consider to be the worst film of all time. I don't think it could be, because it's so much damn fun to watch. But in our worst horror movie list, I will suggest another Ed Wood film, a film I'm doubting any of you have seen. This is truly Ed on the slide. It's called Orgy of the Dead.
Oh, sure.
You've seen it?
I've not seen it. I'm aware of it because I've read Nightmare of Ecstasy and it spent some time on Orgy of the Dead.
It is beyond low budget.
It's not as sexy as it sounds.
I would, if we were making a list of the least sexy films, I would put it on the list, because actually it's kind of more of a sex film than a horror film.
Right.
A it young
was
couple
made very late when he was doing those kinds of movies.
Nudie cuties. Yeah. A Criswell shows up though. A young couple is making out in a car or something, and they get in a car accident. And instead of going to heaven or hell, they go to this weird purgatorial netherworld where they're going to be tested. And the test winds up being, can you sit through an Ed Wood film as the main actor or actress. They are paraded with a series of tableaux, most of them grade D strippers that represent something. And they're supposed to be sort of in a ghoulish graveyard, hell, purgatory, and it becomes excuses for a bunch of lame burlesque dancing. The color is garish. The dialogue is... it's Ed Wood. Well, no one wrote dialogue like Ed.
But here's the thing about Ed Wood. Like, I couldn't bring myself to put any of his movies on the list because he is a terrible filmmaker.
Yes.
But his movies are so personal. There's so much of him in them that I couldn't bring myself, because at least he has that going for him. Even something like Orgy of the Dead, which is a horrible movie, even hearing you describe it, I know exactly where that came from within Ed Wood.
It's true, and lately I have been playing around with the theory that truly great movies reach a point in themselves that is pure delirium. That at one point or another, a truly great film will go completely off the tracks. Well, hey, all of Ed Wood's films did that
right,
too.
Right.
So, right. Patrick might be right, but it's on my list nonetheless.
I wanted to pick a terrible sequel. There are so many to choose from because horror does nothing but repeat itself in a series of franchises, and I'm so glad you picked Halloween, because one of the ones that I worst movies that I picked was Halloween Resurrection from, I think, 2002. The last Halloween movie that was made sort of in sequence before Rob Zombie remade it. This was when it had switched hands to Miramax.
Was that after H2O?
It was after H2O.
Okay.
It was the only one to come out after H2O. H2O was like, oh, that's a refreshing change of pace. That was not a terrible Halloween movie. It's reminiscent of the old one, and it was okay. It didn't insult me.
So should we follow this path, or?
And they made Halloween Resurrection, which I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's
the one...
They're filming a reality show.
It rips off Blair Witch.
In a house...
Yeah.
The end of the movie is Michael Myers being kicked in the face by Busta Rhymes doing
yes.
Kung Fu.
Yes.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Not just one of the worst horror movies, but one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I went to a theater and saw it and just felt like, did they finish this? I don't feel like this is done.
I remember seeing that the weekend it opened, and this doesn't happen very often, but halfway through the film, I began to doubt my own existence. I find that's what happens when the film is truly bad. You start to question your whole life path
right.
that led you to the theater to see that film. And that happened during
it's
Halloween
such a depressing thing, because as a horror movie fan, you want to go see any horror movie that comes out, and you're always hoping that this is the one that will justify your love for this genre. And instead, it's a piece of shit like Halloween Resurrection, which is the kind of movie that gives license to everyone who writes off the genre. It's shit like that that gives horror movies a bad name, and it's so upsetting to see such cynical disrespect for the audience that loves these movies.
If we do this and we do this, some people will be
tricked
into
going. Michael
Myers
is in it, and you like Busta Rhymes, and you liked Blair Witch, right?
Exactly. And again, when you see a good horror film, there's nothing like it, and it's enough to sustain you through an ocean of shit.
And that movie, I'm sorry, but spoilers for Halloween Resurrection, had the nerve to kill off Laurie Strode in the first 10 or 15 minutes, and fuck that. I don't want to go back and watch Halloween knowing that six movies from now, she's going to die in arguably the worst Halloween movie ever made, worse than Season of the Witch.
And it was almost like Resurrection was acknowledging... oh, Jamie Lee Curtis came back for H2O, and people like that? She's too expensive.
Horrible, horrible movie.
And we can't get away from this podcast without mentioning, however briefly, the fact that horror films have endless sequels and endless remakes, but there's none quite as pointless as Gus Van Sant's revisiting of Psycho, because some people just won't watch black and white. And, you know... a masturbating Norman Bates, I find much scarier than a Norman Bates who doesn't seem to be doing that.
I didn't understand that perhaps he wanted her sexually in the Alfred Hitchcock version. I needed that literalized on screen. And when I see him masturbating, I understand why he would need to kill her.
Well, The remake makes many things much more specific, and I would suggest it makes other things bizarrely arcane. I deliberately waited until Psycho, the Gus Van Sant version, made it to the Dollar Show, because I was a purist and I'm not going to give those SOBs any of my money. I went to see it, and maybe it was my dinner, maybe it was the popcorn, but that film made me throw up.
Wow.
And not because it was gross or gory
right,
or no. scary.
Right.
Halfway through the film, I ran up the aisle, ran into the men's room, and threw up. My critical faculties were rejecting the film like a bad kidney. No other film has ever done that.
Wow.
And as I'm fond of saying, for, what was it, 40 years? The remake was made...
98.
Okay, so almost 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
For almost 40 years, people have been watching Psycho and enjoying it. And then Van Sant comes along and remakes it. And in the middle of the shower scene, when the character is getting stabbed to death, we cut to a cloudy,
mm-hmm.
stormy sky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this predicated on the notion that people for 40 years, or almost 40 years, had watched the shower scene, one of the most famous sequences in the history of film, and said, yeah, that's pretty good. But if you put some scenes in of clouds, then you'd really have something. Likewise, when the detective gets it on the steps...
It's buffalo, right?
Vance, I always thought it was a cow.
Oh, maybe it's a cow. It's
these are very, these are very quick cuts, folks. Right. They're almost subliminal. When the detective gets it on the steps, Van Sant thinks it's necessary to cut to a cow. Very strange.
It's a bad enough idea when you say, I'm going to do a shot-for-shot remake of Psycho. That's a bad idea. But okay, whatever. But then to do... I think we've named the three changes to the movie a shot of a cow, a shot of clouds, Norman Bates masturbating.
Because at the time he made it, he was very adamant in interviews that he was literally timing
right.
scenes with a stopwatch right. because he literally wanted it to be shot for shot.
Why those three changes? Either change a lot or do the thing that you say you're doing and just do a shot for shot remake, which again is pointless. I'm not defending that. But to add these three terrible things, I will never understand.
Was he on cocaine with Stephen King?
It's possible. And that's the first movie he made coming off of all of his Good Will Hunting heat.
Which, again, many directors make a tremendous popular success, which then gives them the right to make the personal film.
The shot-for-shot remake of Psycho,
that more
now
often
with more
than
clouds
that.
And cows.
From now on, I'm going to refer to that film as Clouds and Cows. It doesn't even deserve to be called Psycho.
My next choice for one of the worst is a sequel to a movie that's already a giant piece of shit. Unlike Halloween Resurrection, a sequel to a great movie. It's Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2. And of course, Silent Night, Deadly Night is the movie that had everyone up in arms in the 80s because it's about a boy who sees his parents raped and murdered by a guy in a Santa suit and then goes on a killing spree as an adult. And it's just in horrible taste, and it's a terrible, cheap, shitty movie.
I remember the brouhaha
yeah.
about the original.
It was...
Because about 10 years before that, something similar had happened. I think it was called Black Christmas or something. I think that's actually a Bob Clark film,
yeah,
the guy
is.
Who made...
Yeah.
Porky's and A Christmas Story. And
Christmas Evil was another one.
You don't mess with Christmas.
No.
You don't mess
you
with
don't.
Christmas.
But Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 somehow manages to be much shittier than Silent Night, Deadly Night because what it does, and it's fascinating to watch, if you have to see one of these movies, see Part 2, because what Part 2 does is spend half or possibly more, I've never timed it, of its running time showing scenes from the first movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. So you get two movies in one. You get to see the original shit movie and then the new shit movie. and they're both awful.
And I'm going to borrow a joke that I'm sure everyone's heard before. Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, because Silent Night, Deadly Night left so many unanswered questions.
The tagline on the poster for Silent Night, Deadly Night 2...
It's Christmas again.
I wish. No. Here it is. Prayers won't save you in the silent part of this night. Someone tell me, look, we worked in all of the words.
And you know
what is the silent part of this night?
You know what's weird about that? It sounds like foreigners were asked to come up with an advertising slogan, and then they
prayers won't save you in silent part of this night.
And then they badly translated it into English. It sounds like a fortune cookie.
The silent part of this night.
Oh my God. Next film on my list, speaking of crazy pointless sequels, Exorcist 2.
Oh,
Heretic.
I've never seen it.
You are missing out, my friend. William Friedkin, who refused to have anything to do with the sequel, and everyone who was in the original who refused to have anything to do with the sequel, William Friedkin still calls it Exorcist 2 the Harry Tit, because he says that to make fun of it.
That's a clever play on words, William Friedkin.
Jade. Linda Blair is a little bit older, yeah, and she's having dreams, and we can't get Max von Sydow because he was killed in the original. Oops, spoiler. And we can't get Father Damien,
right.
Miller.
Nope, sorry.
Going to drive me crazy. So we get Richard Burton.
Sure.
Famous
sure.
English actor
sure.
to play another priest who discovers that the demon inhabiting Reagan is this African bad ghost called Pazuzu.
And that's what they should have called it, Exorcist 2 Pazuzu.
And there's another demon that rules Pazuzu.
Sure.
So a great deal of the running time is Richard Burton saying these two words.
That sounds like a Who's on First routine.
Now, I can't remember the first demon.
Pazuzu? Pazuzu.
I can't remember the other demon, but let's assume it's like Chechuku. I'm just making that up. I can't remember. So we have one of the most famous actors in the English language. Pachuku can lead me to Pazuzu. Pazuzu can lead me to Pachuco. And I guess the original film was greeted with hoots and catcalls from people who lined up because The Exorcist was a massive hit.
Yeah.
And they pretty much laughed this off the screen, which made Warner Brothers very nervous. And they took the unprecedented step of they recalled all the prints and came up with a new ending, which was even worse. Now, I don't remember which ending was the original ending and which ending was the final ending they chose, but one of them involves a plague of locusts and Linda Blair and Richard Burton with obviously fake locusts flying around them, and Burton is yelling Pazuzu, and it's batshit crazy.
It just showed up on the Netflix instant option. So I may have to give it a look.
I want to give that a spin. Louise Fletcher shows up as a psychologist.
Very good.
Helping Reagan through this because, of course, Ellen Burstyn wisely said, no.
Didn't someone legitimate direct that, though?
Yes. I believe John Borman.
Okay. I think you're right.
And
yikes.
Talk about an assignment.
Yeah,
you know, in a weird way, given the place that The Exorcist holds in horror film history, it would be like making Hamlet 2,
right.
which, of right. course, is a comedy.
And then for the third one, the author took a shot at directing, right?
Right. And I actually, well, the book, Legion, is very interesting and worth a read and full of interesting things. And there's a couple moments in that film that I think are good. George C. Scott takes over the role of Kinderman, the detective from Lee J. Cobb. And it is not a film without merit. That also was subject to massive studio interference. How can we have an exorcist film without an exorcism? The actor who plays Damien in the first one shows up in Legion at the end in a straight jacket, and it's weird, and thank God that Jason Miller, that's
nice.
His name.
Wow.
who's actually a playwright. He wrote that Championship Season, which was a big hit on Broadway. But at that point, Jason Miller was still alive and agreed to do reshoots and be in the film. Although Brad Dourif is actually the sort of the demon in
right.
that one.
And then, of course, there was a fourth Exorcist movie that was such a mess, they turned it into two movies with two different directors and two different titles. The lesson is, don't do a sequel to The Exorcist. But it's only a matter of time before we get a remake.
It's true. And I know both of those films, I think it was the first one, features a scene of jackals attacking a child, which, of course, breaks my rule of don't get children involved.
My next movie is a movie I saw only recently, and that is another sequel to a very popular contemporary horror franchise, The Final Destination, which is the fourth film in the Final Destination series.
The 3D one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it came out in 2009. I recently caught it for the first time on HBO, and it's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It's alarmingly incompetent, not just as a horror movie, but just as a movie. The special effects are some of the worst you'll see in a studio film. The actors are beyond wooden. You can't understand how these people were chosen to be in a movie when you know that there are lots of people looking for a break who have to be more talented than this. You have no idea how they were chosen. I don't necessarily get the appeal of the Final Destination series. To me, it's sort of a Faces of Death, but with sort of a narrative to it. It's just how many Rube Goldbergian ways can we find to kill teenagers? That being said, I think there's some merit to the second Final Destination movie because it's the only movie that gets how stupid it is, and it is sort of a comedy. And there are things to like about that movie. That director, whose name I think is David Ellis, directed the fourth movie, and it's awful. And I only saw it in 2D. Perhaps the 3D version is outstanding. But it turns out it is not the Final Destination, because now they're working on a fifth Final Destination movie.
I remember seeing the trailer many times before it came out and being struck by what low self-esteem they must think that the perceived audience for this film has. Because the big special effect in the trailer was the kids go to a NASCAR race, and a car flies off the track, and a wheel flies off the car, and lands in the crowd, and kills people. And through the wonder of 3D, they made the theater audience the crowd. So maybe I'm old and I don't understand anything. But I go to horror films for a whole bunch of different reasons. But simulating a NASCAR accident right. that takes me out
right.
is not one of them.
Right. And that's what I've never understood about the movies. It's just how many different ways can I watch people die? And it's not scary, and there's no beating it, because it's not a thing that can be defeated. It's chance and fate, and death is going to get you no matter what. They're terrible movies, and this is the worst among them.
And finally, thank you for making it this far, is not only the worst horror film ever made, and in the words of Bill Hicks, I can prove this on an Etch-A-Sketch, but I think it's one of the worst films ever made.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure Patrick will agree with me.
Oh.
It's M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening.
I almost should have done my fifth before this, because this is really the one we should end on.
It's certainly not scary.
No.
It's a lot of things, but it's not scary, because you'd really have to be a master. I could probably name only three directors that can make the central conceit work. Big spoiler, folks. It's The Wind. And oddly enough, in a lot of penny dreadfuls and gothics, you know, the wind in the shutters or the wind in the trees is used to create atmosphere. But the wind ain't scary.
No. And especially now when you get a scene of people running from the, they attempt to visualize this by having a scene of people running from the wind, and it's catching up with them the way a fireball does in an action movie, but they're able to outrun it.
Who can see the wind? As Donovan once sang. And what's interesting is that this wind, which carries some, I don't know, I fell asleep. The wind is scary. It causes people to do incredibly violent things.
Right.
And at this point, there's plenty of ways to make that work, because right. that part reminded me of, I haven't seen the American remake, but the film Pulse.
Okay.
Where all of a sudden, these really inexplicable, sudden, violent things are happening. Like people throwing themselves off buildings.
Okay.
And that's one of the scariest films I've ever seen.
Okay.
And so there's a way to make that work. But too many characters, a seeming soap opera in the middle of the scary wind that isn't scary. In our small group of friends, one of the lines from the film has become immortalized and as one of the worst lines of dialogue in any film. Don't hold her hand. unless you mean it. And I'm not even going to explain why it's silly, because it doesn't matter. It's so bad it isn't even funny.
Right. It's horribly written, it's horribly acted, it's horribly directed, and again, all the more so because it comes from a director of tremendous ego who has created his own celebrity, who was once nominated for Academy Awards. It is a fall from grace like you've never seen.
And his films clearly just get worse and worse and worse, and I like what you said about The Cult of Celebrity. Again, I can't say this strongly enough. With the greatest director of all time, the greatest screenwriter of all time, the greatest DP, and the greatest actors, you would be hard-pressed to make this work.
Yeah.
And we're far from the greatest in this. We're far out in a field, and I hear the wind.
And, once again, violates the Pet Sematary rule in that it does horrible things to children.
Leave children out of it.
Yeah.
And Children in Jeopardy? No problem at all.
Sure.
But that's crossing a line.
Right. And so much was made of the film and the advertising when it came out that it was the first R-rated movie from M. Night Shyamalan. But to what effect? It's unbelievably bad, and I almost feel bad following it up because there's no movie worse than The Happening. But I did have to pick a fifth, and speaking of directors who sort of fall from grace, although this director's sort of cult of fandom has eluded me my whole life, it is Dario Argento's Mother of Tears.
And I like Dario. I like his early films.
Yeah.
And I remember going to the Music Box, speaking of the Music Box, to go see it, and so desperately wanting to like it, so desperately wanting to get out of it what I originally got out of Suspiria, for example, and it's partially incoherent, it's muddied, it's really mean-spirited.
Yeah.
For a director who's famous for being mean-spirited.
Yeah.
In the theater, I got the feeling I was watching an unrated version that would never come out on video. And the special effects were bad. So not only was I seeing things that I personally consider offensive, but I was seeing them done poorly.
Right.
By special effects technicians who weren't very good. I'm thinking of certain things being inserted into other things where these things and possibly no thing should ever go. There's a lot of impalements.
Yeah, a truly, truly ugly, nonsensical, terrible movie that goes batshit crazy.
And at the end, we're in some crazy place, and there's a woman up on an altar or something, and I don't know how we got here.
Right.
You know, it's almost like it needed that joke from Grindhouse, real missing.
Right.
Because that's the way it comes across. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. No, I think that's a fine film to end on.
The last thing I'll say, we do need to wrap up, obviously, but it's so many of the directors that we've talked about, be it Dario Argento or George Romero or John Carpenter, or you look at Tobe Hooper or Wes Craven, so many of these horror directors who were once great are now sort of relegated to doing just shitty imitations of the movies that they used to do.
And that's interesting, because again, in this documentary that I really recommend, The American Nightmare, at least two of them say, I don't think they'd let me do that anymore.
Sure.
Which is disturbing.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to hire Wes Craven or John Carpenter, you might want to let them do what they want to do, because they're really good at it.
And on that note, we will end. Thank you very much for making it all the way through this show. Hopefully it was entertaining and gave you some ideas of what to watch and what not to watch this Halloween.
It's going
to
be a great October.
Don't forget to take part in the F Horror Movies Challenge on fthismovie.blogspot.com. 7-word reviews of any horror movie you watch this October.
And we will see you at the Music Box on October 9th.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.